Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the studios of WOL in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. The National Defense Program seems to be face-to-face with another strike crisis tonight. Probably the most serious crisis thus far, except for the tie-up in the soft coal industry during April. And the top powers in Congress began some quiet maneuvering late this afternoon to take steps by way of legislation if the difficulties continue. As you know, the shipyards at San Francisco are now tied up by one strike. They walk out by about 1,700 machinists who want a wage of $1.15 a day. Their pay was raised only a few weeks ago from $1 a day to $1.12 in a general blanket agreement between the American Federation of Labor and all of the shipyards on the West Coast. That agreement having been negotiated by Mr. Sidney Hillman of the OPM. That blanket agreement contains a guarantee on the part of the American Federation of Labor against any strikes or any labor tie-ups in those Pacific Coast shipyards. The machinists, however, of the AFL say that they did not ratify that agreement. Therefore, they are not bound by it. And so they have walked out and tied up the entire ship industry of the coast. Mr. William Green, the president of the American Federation of Labor, has stated that the strike is unauthorized. He has directed the other 20 or 25,000 workers in the shipyards there to ignore it and to continue operating the yards in keeping with their contracts with the shipbuilding companies. But Mr. Green apparently is unable to control the situation because even beyond the fact that the machinists have walked out in violation of his orders on that score, the other 20 to 25,000 workers refuse to go back to work, and so the strike continues. 11 shipyards tied up at the very time when cargo vessels are the most important single item in the entire battle of the Atlantic. More than $300 million worth of shipbuilding contracts at a complete standstill. The vitally important Colt Patent Firearms Company in Hartford, Connecticut, which is turning out important contracts for Army and Navy guns, also is shut down. About 6,000 workers there walked out today. And most important of all, it appears tonight that the 61 plants of the huge General Motors Corporation, which has more than $500 million worth of defense orders, will be shut down by a CIO strike tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Detroit time. There are two issues in that case. First of all, the union wants a wage increase of 10 cents an hour. General Motors has offered increases of 2 to 3.5 cents an hour, but it refuses to go any higher than that. Mr. C.E. Wilson, president of the General Motors Company, says that General Motors employees already are receiving considerably more than the average wage scale for the automotive industry, far above the average wage scale for the manufacturing industries of the country. General Motors now is paying $1.05 an hour. And he says that the 10-cent increase is exorbitant. He says it will mean a heavy increase in the cost of defense materials to the government and a drain on the taxpayers of the country. The union says that General Motors is making heavy profits out of the defense program, that labor has a right to get a share of those profits. What's more, the union leaders say that they will not stop any production on defense orders. This strike, they say, is strictly and solely against commercial production, and they insist that they will continue to work on all government contracts. But the company's reply to that is that it's impossible to segregate defense work from commercial work in these General Motors plants. In a spark plug factory, for example, they say it's impossible to conduct a strike against 2 out of every 5 spark plugs that come along the same production line. So if any part of General Motors is closed down, they say all of it will have to be closed down. The other point in the dispute is the union's demand for a closed shop. That's something on which the company refuses to make any concessions whatsoever. They now recognize the union is the bargaining representative for all union workers in General Motors plants, but they refuse to require that all workers join the union in order to hold their jobs, which, of course, it would mean in the event of a closed shop. This General Motors controversy has been in the hands of the president's mediation board for some weeks now. The The strike was to have been called nearly a month ago. Then it was postponed until tomorrow morning to afford a little more time for discussion. All day long today, the union leaders and the company representatives have been in session here with the mediation board. They're taking a very brief recess for supper at the present moment, and they're coming back again this evening for what probably will be an all-night session. Very frankly, however, my information from behind those closed doors is that there is very little possibility of any final settlement this evening. It is barely possible, but only barely possible, that they might agree on another postponement. That's something to watch for as the evening wears on. But there's little hope of a final settlement, and unless there is another postponement, the 61 plants of General Motors Corporation will close down as of 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Now, as for the maneuvering on this labor problem in Congress, you remember I told you on several occasions about the Vinson anti-strike bill, which has been cleared by the Rules Committee of the House of Representatives. Instead of bringing that bill up for action in the House of Representatives as a whole, I reported to you, however, that it was being set aside on the table there in the House as a sort of reserve weapon to be used only in case of necessity. This afternoon, Representative Howard Smith of Virginia, acting as the chairman of the Rules Committee, went through the quiet little formality of filing a rule on the Vinson bill. In simple language, that is a preliminary, which makes it possible for any member of the Rules Committee of the House to call up the Vinson bill at any time, beginning tomorrow, call it up for active consideration on the House floor. And if these labor tie-ups continue to get worse, you may count on it that it's a dead certainty that that will happen. Representative John McCormick of Massachusetts, the Democratic leader of the House, is a real and very sincere friend of labor. He's done heroic yeoman service in trying to sidetrack and discourage the Vinson anti-strike bill thus far, and he's been pretty successful. He believes that the bill goes too far, that it really is not necessary, and both of the labor organizations, the CIO and the AFL, have stated their opposition to it, as you well know. The way things are going, however, the situation is playing directly into the hands of the groups that are promoting the Vinson bill and playing directly into the hands of those who are opposing Mr. McCormick. Each time there's a new tie-up in defense production due to strikes, the Vinson bill supporters gain a few more supporters. And with some question, a very serious question, how much longer Mr. McCormick is going to be able to keep this bill sidetracked, particularly if the strike against General Motors materializes tomorrow morning. I might mention that Mr. Sidney Hillman of the Office of Production Management sent a telegram to the Machinist Union in San Francisco on the shipyard strike this afternoon, insisting that they call off their strike and resume operations. That telegram, however, went completely unheeded. The shipyard strike still continues. Now, in the meantime, there were developments this afternoon in the Senate on the subject of convoys. You recall, of course, that Senator Tropy of New Hampshire has been agitating for some time, trying to get legislation to forbid the president to use the Navy for convoying. He has a resolution to that effect, which is tied up in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee at this present moment. In order to sidestep that situation, that tie-up in the Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Tropy has announced that he would offer the wording of that resolution in the form of a proposed amendment to a bill that now is under consideration in the Senate, the bill authorizing the president to take over the impounded foreign ships that are in American ports. But today, when the time came to introduce that anti-convoy amendment, some of Senator Tobey's supporters went to his office for a conference of strategy. They told him they doubted the wisdom of forcing the issue just at this time. Senator Tobey wanted to know why. They explained to him that the president already is on record as opposing convoys. Any action that would be taken under the circumstances, anything that would be written into the present bill, would be strictly negative. It would be forbidding something that the president says he's not going to do anyway. And they reported to Senator Tobey that numerous senators who were opposed to convoys would vote against the amendment at this time. I can verify that, incidentally, verify the fact that that's true. Quite a few senators have told me that if the president were to come to Congress and ask for authority to use the Navy for convoying, they would vote against him. Or if he should use the Navy in that way without asking authority, they would vote to stop it. But they said that they will not vote to forbid convoys at the present time because they believe it is unnecessary and might be misconstrued. Senator Toby's friends told him today that if he does force the issue at present, he will be defeated in the Senate. The anti-convoy amendment would be voted down, and that also jibes with my information. They expressed the opinion that that defeat would be a serious boomerang. The people who are promoting the use of convoys would then say that the Senate, in effect, had approved the use of convoys by voting down a proposal against them. Senator Toby took the matter under advisement. Late this afternoon, there was another off-the-record meeting of the little group in the office of Senator Burton K. Wheeler of Montana. Among those present were Senator Worth Clark of Idaho, Senator Taft, Senator Bob La Follette, Senator Curly Brooks of Waylon C. Brooks of Illinois. And at that meeting, Senator Toby told his colleagues that he definitely will not bring up his anti-convoy amendment at this time. Now, as for the Senate debate today on this question of commandeering the foreign ships, to begin with, Senator Bailey of North Carolina, who is a strong interventionist, said that the United States may be inviting war by taking over these vessels, but he said he's in favor of the proposal anyway. Senator Vandenberg of Michigan, Senator Pepper of Florida, had a bitter duel about whether the ships that are taken over from Germany and Italy should be turned over to Great Britain. Senator Vandenberg offered an amendment to allow the Danish ships to be transferred to Great Britain, but prevent the German and Italian ones from being transferred. Senator Pepper of Florida's position was that it makes no difference what the consequences are. All of the ships should be taken over at once and turned over to the British. Senator Vandenberg, who has something of a personal feud with Senator Pepper, looked at him at that point and said that some of our more belligerent gladiators are bent on having this country fight a war on four continents when we're not able to fight on one. As for the rest of the news, the defense program has another crisis tonight. To add to the difficulties we're having in producing guns and planes and real fighting equipment, it seems that Secretary of the Navy Knox has discovered a shocking weakness in our defense. All of the eagles on the buttons and the cap insignia of the Navy are looking in the wrong direction. And it develops today that he has issued an order that all of them must be replaced at once. All of the buttons and all of the cap insignia of the Navy must be replaced at once. So in addition to the problem of producing more planes, more engines, more guns, more battleships, American industry now must produce an entire new set of buttons and insignia for the Navy. But that's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until tomorrow evening, good night.
Fulton Lewis, Jr. may be heard again tomorrow evening at this same hour. These commentaries on the day's news originate at WOL in Washington. Frank Blair speaking. Broadcasting systems.